Well, hey guys, welcome to the Boning Soul Podcast. Thanks for joining me again. Okay, God, it's been another 3 weeks, I think. It's like I said last time, it's kind of getting harder and harder to do these and schedule people and still have any kind of modicum of free time. So, anyway, I finally got a podcast together. This week, I am joined by Stephen Matthews. So, he's got a YouTube channel called Feel the Spirit. I don't know if you guys have watched it or not. If you haven't, go watch it. It goes back a few years. He's really kind of ramped up his content. In the last, I'm going to say 6-8 months or something like that. But he's got some older videos out there too. So he's he's definitely increasing his content output. You know, good stuff to watch. Just like always. Mostly traditional. He does do other muzzle loader and rifle and all that kind of stuff as well. Shotgun, you know, for small game and whatnot. But he kind of switched over to full time traditional. After growing up with. He shot compounds and things like that, but I mean, he's had a stick bow in his hand for quite a while. So, and he's pretty good at it. So, he's just a guy that, again, I wanted to kind of get to know a little bit better and just kind of chit chat and talk about how he hunts, where he hunts, that kind of thing. Just normal BS session, like in the swing hunting season. So that was really cool. So, other than that, there's really not a whole lot else to talk about. I think, did I record this right? No, I didn't. So last Monday, Friday, I don't know, one of these nights, I went out, had another awesome, almost encounter. I went back to a spot where I know deer are coming out of this brush line, and it's kind of in a marshy area. I've talked about this before, where you can't really get a good, a tree stand set up in because the trees are all falling over or about to fall over or really sketchy or too far away from where I need to be. So there's one tree that I need to be in to be able to cover a couple potential lanes that they're coming out of. And about 10 minutes till end of legal shooting light. I'm facing the tree, and the tree is between me and where they're going to come out from. And I peek over, and there's a deer there. You know, it's really dim light at this point. She sees me. It's probably a yearling doe, and kind of gets sketched out. We kind of she does the head bob and kind of thing. And I'm pretty much plastered up against the tree at this point. You know, my chest and my face are pretty much plastered against the trunk. Then there's another deer. Actually, there's three of them that came out. Another kind of younger one, I think. And then this older doe. And I don't know that it was her yearlings, to be honest. It was they were a little bit bigger than yearling. But the bigger doe, after about a 5 minute stand down or stare down, decides that she's going to get a little bit brave and start coming toward me. Now at this point, I'm just basically plastered up against the tree. I have my hand on my bow, which is parallel. You know, again, stuck. I'm basically hugging the tree. And I'm peeking around the tree to see what she's going to do. So she starts coming toward me, but I need to step away, you know, take a step backwards on the platform, basically, so I can actually get clearance from the tree and then actually draw. So she gets to under 15 yards and does she's completely facing away from me now. She's totally turned away, which was great because I needed her to do that so that she didn't see me grab the bow and draw the bow. Now, the younger doe at this point had enough. She bounded off. She was a little too sketched out about it. But this bigger one was kind of standing there facing away, and all she needed to do was either turn 90 degrees one way or 90 degrees another way, and I would have been able to draw and at least take a broadside or even a quartering away shot. But right, all I had was a Texas hard shot, basically, and I'm not going to take that, obviously. But so she sat there for another couple of few minutes and then bounded off, with basically 2 minutes of legal daylight left, basically. But she just went straight away. Just chalk up another encounter that, I mean, I'm right there, but they just didn't turn one way or another. I mean, literally 90 degrees one way or another, and I'm good. But, kind of feel vindicated, this is where they're coming out. This is what they're doing. Just can't. I think I'm going to go in on the ground next time. I think I'm going to do a ground setup and just be literally plunked down as close as I can to where they're going to pop out of the brush line. I mean, it's almost like hiding, hiding right around the corner from a doorway, and someone, steps out of the doorway, you pop them in the head kind of thing, right? Don't do that, by the way, but you get the idea. It's an analogy. I think I just got to be that close. I just can't get any closer in a tree. It's just not happening. So anyway, went out today. Today is the day before Halloween. Went out today midday for a couple few hours, going in on a place where I knew I needed to kind of walk along the beach of this river. And there was a point jutting out, you know, in this terrain. And I was going to walk along the beach and then climb up the hill, up the side of that cliff, basically, because I know that's where they bed. The wind was going to be really, really iffy. I mean, I really needed to, like, just hug the beach. And if I blew something out going in, it was the only option I had. And anyway, going in, I think one of them saw me. I think I blew out three deer, deer three times. It might have been the same couple deer when they blew out, or I bumped them rather, and saw the direction they were going. I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep going that direction and then kind of swing around and J-hook in front of them maybe, and then work my way back with a better wind situation because there's no other way to access this place. So anyway, long story short. I bumped two deer, or two times going in, set up on the ground, found a good spot, and a nice, really nice transition, really thick. And I did see a doe kind of crossing about, I don't know, 20 yards or so. She was in brush. I blew a grunt call because it was the closest one I had. I should have done a doe bleat maybe. But just a quick little, like meh, you know, kind of like a grunt call. And it actually spooked her, and she ran off. So there you go. And then I bumped one, of course, on the way back, but I wasn't trying to be super careful on the way back. I was just trying to make my way out. I did find oyster mushrooms. I found a nice big pile of oyster mushrooms. It was the first time I found those. Cooking those suckers up. I tried a little bit, just a little bit earlier here, actually. So super good. I found chicken of the woods before. I found morels before. Never oysters. And actually, these actually have a lot of flavor. I'm really, really happy with them. So I had a couple bites, maybe like a half a chicken nugget size, basically just to eat it today. And then if I don't have any like weird reaction or whatever, I'm gonna cook them up with some steak or whatnot, some meat tomorrow night. So that's gonna be really good. So at least I didn't come out with totally nothing. So anyway, I did learn a lot. I did learn a few new spots. It's just trying to get to some of these spots is, man, it's the wind is either bad normally, and today it was going to be iffy, and I just kind of skirted it. But you know, I just gotta get aggressive, I guess, and just kind of roll the dice there. So. Anywho, that is the update for me. I don't have any other update other than just that. I'm going to get to go out literally, like I said, once a week, if that. And then even today, for example, I'm not able to go out tonight. Monday is normally my day. Today's a Monday. I'm not able to go out out tonight. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I can finagle one, you know, a couple hours or something like that, an evening coming up here during this week, because I really want to go sit on the ground where I had that encounter with those does the other day. So anyway, that's what I'm doing. That's where I'm at. Nothing else. Obviously, if you guys are listening to this, I appreciate it. Super appreciate your support. Even though these podcasts are coming out longer and longer in between, I do appreciate you guys listening. So of course, the podcast is partially sponsored by The Push, right? The Push Archery Center of Knowledge. Go check out all of those courses, super awesome courses. You've probably heard about them by now, all kinds of stuff over there. Go check out, you know, all the merchandise and all that stuff they got over at The Push, super cool stuff. And then obviously go check out Hiko Ito Knives, right? It's H-I-K-O. ITO, right? Hiko Ito Knives. Go check them out. Them meaning he builds some really incredible stuff, really cool stuff. And I'm really hoping to get that knife bloody again this year. I did it with the pig, obviously, and I really like to put it to use on a deer. That'd be super sweet. So anywho, talk long enough, sorry about the long intro here, and we're just going to get right into it. Super cool conversation with Stephen Matthews with Feel the Spirit. So here we go. Thanks for listening.
There we go. Okay, cool. It should say recording on your end, right?
Yes.
Cool. Awesome. So I'm on the phone with, and you're Stephen, right?
Did I get that?
Yeah. Stephen Matthews?
Yep.
Yeah, I can't screw that one up. I've got names that I screw up all the time. So thanks for being on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so we're doing this like on a weekend, and you know, we've been trying to hook up here and trying to get you on a podcast. So I've been watching your stuff on YouTube, And you got a lot of cool stuff out there. So I definitely want to get into like who you are, you know, where you hunt, how you hunt, that kind of thing. I want to talk about your journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you shoot traditional, but you shoot a bunch of other stuff. And you're just kind of mm-hmm. like sportsman out there. So I guess maybe before we get too far into it, if you want to just kind of give the quickie kind of synopsis of like who you are and where you live and that kind of thing. And then we just go from there.
Well, I'm from the Appalachian Mountains of Virginia. So the big mountain range, this is completely like a lot of people equate it to more of kind of like the Southern culture, but it's completely different. It's basically from the time that I was able to like walk, I've hunted as much as I could because my dad's like had plenty of time off during hunting season and stuff. So really, that's just all I've done my whole entire life is just hunt as much as I could. So
that's awesome. What do you do up there? In your normal life, in your non-hunting life, like what do you work? What do you do for?
Usually just anything I can make enough money to where I can hunt for about 3 months. And then that's pretty much it. That's what I've done for the last like 3-4 years now. So
really, yeah, I'm asking because, you know, a lot of guys tailor their lifestyles and jobs and all that stuff around like hunting season. Mm-hmm. Right. So it affords them, yeah, like you said, a lot of time to be able to go out and hunt and just kind of enjoy those like 3-4 months and then worry about the rest of the year later, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I'm not so lucky. I'm splitting my day here at my job for recording this on a Sunday. Man. And, you know, it's one of those where I can kind of split up my day, but then make up the hours kind of thing. So, and by if it sounds echoey, I'm in like a little conference room, by the way, if anybody is like, why does it sound echoey in there? Yeah. But, so no, man, like I said, I started watching you, I don't know, a while ago. I don't know, maybe like a year ago or something like that. Right. And you've been on YouTube for like, I don't know, several years now. Right. I mean, you're, it's growing, pretty quick from in the last, like, I don't know, several months, I'm going to say, right. Or like half year or whatever, but you got stuff like way back, like three, four years, something like that. And you got some pretty cool stuff out there and you're putting out all this content. And I want to get into all that. I want to kind of get into like your style. And, I mean, you said you've been hunting since you were like basically a kid, right? I mean, so what did that start with? I mean, did you go out with your dad, grandparents, you know, small game, big game, like what was your introduction there?
Yeah, my dad, whenever I was really little, about the time that I got to about 3 or 4, my dad started filming. He filmed a lot of stuff, like with those old camcorders you could get. Mm-hmm. And back then, about the time whenever I was like 3 or 4, and I started hunting, I think the first time I ever went, we went groundhog hunting, and he's got the video of him shooting a groundhog and then like me and my sister going up to it and then me calling my mom, telling her about it. And it was, that was pretty cool. But from the very beginning, like I think it was the second deer I ever shot is actually on my dad's YouTube channel. And I was 6 years old and, he's got it on video.
Really?
Yeah.
God. So they were just, big culture there. You said it's Appalachian, right? Appalachian culture has like a lot of history of hunting and like mountain men, that kind of stuff. I mean, is the whole region like that, or you know, are you guys just
it's kind of like the common thing, because most of the time, like when I talk to people, I talk about hunting, and a lot of the times if I go talk to somebody, like some guy random just out anywhere, more than likely he's either been hunting or he hunts. So
yeah so it's not such a rarity. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the biggest thing out there? Deer, obviously.
Yeah, pretty much whitetail. I mean, I'm a huge turkey hunter too, but that tends to not be as big as most people. It's just all deer.
Yeah. So Virginia, we were talking just a little bit before we started recording here, and you're getting ready to go on on a trip, and you said, explain that again. You said how Virginia is kind of split like east and west as far as like regulations go.
So the Blue Ridge Mountains kind of run, it kind of separates the Appalachian side from the flatter side. And there's on our side, it's on the western side in the mountains, we have early bow season for a month, and then we have 2 weeks of early muzzle loading, 2 weeks of rifle, 2 weeks of late archery, and then 2 to 3 weeks of late muzzle loading. But on the eastern side, they have the month of bow hunting, the archery season. Then they have 2 weeks of early muzzle loading. Then they have the 2 weeks of rifle. But they also have a lot of dog running that they can do once rifle starts. And then it goes into shotgun season for the rest of the year. And most of the deer killed out there, like most of the people hunting, are all just running dogs.
Really?
There's just a higher population density out there. Mm-hmm. So they allow three tags. We get two either sex tags, and then one either sex tag, but it has to be east of Blue Ridge.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So after whatever certain part of the season, you decide to just kind of, you guys do like an annual trip kind of thing out east, or?
Yeah. Actually, the guys that I usually work for and help out all the time, they own a boat shop up the road here. And that's what they do. They work on boats and stuff all summer, and then they hunt during the winter. But they own a trailer out there, and we just go out there. Usually here recently, me and my dad started going and bow hunting it early. But usually it's that first week of early muzzle loading is when their rut starts to hit. And then by the time we come back and start hunting here again, the rut's starting to hit here. So we'll go out there and try to hit the rut, and then come back here and hit the rut once it starts back here.
So I didn't realize that Virginia was one of those where the rut kind of hits differently depending on, mm-hmm. on where you are, right? That's, I mean, because you always hear about that, like in Alabama or something like that, right? Where, you know, once or Florida, you know, like one group, I guess, will be like rutting in like August or something, you know, and like Florida or whatever, and the other ones are like January or something crazy. But why do you think that is? Is that like a mountain, like the elevation thing, terrain thing? I mean, or is that just the species that, I don't know, evolve that way, I guess?
Yeah, I kind of wonder, because like the deer out there are also like probably typically 35 to 40 pounds less than the deer that we have on this on the mountainside. Mm-hmm. Because usually it's colder here than it is out there. But yet, and like the leaves are starting to leave the trees here, but we'll go out there and there'll still be green leaves on trees. And yet the deer are starting to rut earlier. And I don't know what causes it.
That's crazy. So I'm in Minnesota. So I'm going to say the leaves are still all up, but I mean, they're definitely dropping, right? I mean, like at a pretty quick rate. So, you know, we're past that whole, you know, the fall color foliage kind of thing. It's kind of getting harder and harder to find cover, you know, in trees and stuff. And we're getting to that. But then like our rut is like the first, I don't know, like early November, you know, early to mid November kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And what they do here is, you know, like it or not, I guess it's pros and cons, but like the rut is, our rifle season, our firearm season is pretty much smack dab in the middle of the rut, right? I mean, it starts like next weekend, which will be like November like 4th or whatever that is, right? And then it goes for, depending on where you are in the state, it goes from, you know, anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 weeks or whatever. Yeah, so.
Yeah, ours is typically about the same. Like our last year we had an early rut here. We had it backwards. We went out there while the deer were starting to rut here, and they weren't rutting out there yet. But that's usually it's never like that. But last year it hit early. Like last year it hit pretty much that that last week of October and then that first week of November. And then by the time rifle season came in here, it was already kind of dwindling down. And once rifle season come in, I didn't see half the bucks I seen that muzzleloading season.
Really? So where you're at, like, you know, excluding like your trip, you know, to the eastern part of the state and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. What's bigger there? Is there a big bow hunting culture, or are they more firearm? Like what's that kind of demographic look like, you know, once hunting season comes in for deer?
Usually it's all fire. Like a lot of people don't really bow hunt. It's all, they're starting to get more, like the younger people are starting to get more into bow hunting. But, and then right above me in West Virginia is a bow hunting only county. Mm-hmm. And that's where everybody tends to go. I actually have my West Virginia license, and I have a buddy that is going to let me hunt their lease, but I haven't had the time or the stuff to go up there and hunt it. But once I come back from the trips and stuff, I'm hoping to get to hunt up there, because where it's bow only, deer get a lot bigger, and that's usually where everybody kills their big bucks at.
Yeah.
But then down here, it's a difference of like an hour drive. Down here, it's nothing but everybody just gun hunting in the woods and only hunting that like 2 days of or the 2 weeks of rifle season. And I grew up hunting kind of big woods, but also cattle pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up doing a lot of long range rifle shooting. I've shot deer. I think I killed a doe one time whenever I was maybe 7 or 8 at like 500 some yards with a 243.
Wow.
It's just kind of like the common thing was to be able to just sit where you know where deer are, to where you can see a far ways, and eventually once those does come in heat, the bucks come in there and run them, and then you're sitting where you can see them and you get a shot at them. I have some videos. I've wanted to kind of edit them together and post them, because I have some videos of some longer, and I shot one last year at 400 some yards, I remember, that I posted. But I think that, like, whenever I was younger, I know my dad's got videos of him shooting deer somewhere from 800 to 900 yards. So,
jeez,
that was kind of like the common thing whenever I was growing up, was just sit where you can see real far, and then where you know where deer come out, you can see real far. And then when the bucks go to chasing the does, you know, you can just lay down and shoot it.
Right, right. God, that's crazy. That's, I don't know. My longest shot on anything is 189 yards. That's with, you know, a scope 30-06, right? That was a few years ago. Right. And I'm like, man, that seemed like a long way away. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with a 400-yard shot. I don't even know if I'd have the skill to take that, you know?
Yeah, I've told people, because I've shot in some, I shot a coyote a couple of years ago, offhanded at about 280 yards with a muzzleloader.
Wow.
And a lot of people, like, I've shot in I shoot the 777 pellets in my muzzleloader.
Mm-hmm.
So three of those pellets, my crosshairs, as I line it in at about an inch high at 100, and then 150 for the first dot down, and then 150, 200, and then 225, and 250. So most of the time I can shoot anywhere out to 250 yards, but that morning there was a little doe acting weird, and then I figured there might be a buck chasing her. So when I seen a flash come back up over the hill, I was like, oh, there's the buck. And then I looked and it was a coyote. So where we were sitting at, I couldn't lay down and shoot it, so I had to just pick the gun up and offhand it, and it was trotting up the mountain away from me, and I just held the thick part of the scope about a foot over top of it and just pulled a trigger, and it went right up through him.
No kidding. Wow. That's So I love shooting my muzzleloader. You know, I've got a TC Impact, you know, which is like their kind of entry level one, but it's one of the most accurate rifles I have. So I actually shot a deer at 117 yards with that one, which I was pretty damn proud of myself. Now we're shooting open sights here. I should say it used to be open sights and muzzleloader season here, just like anything else. Like here, it's all these regulations are going by way of like, oh, now this year they're going to allow crossbows, right, for archery. Yeah. But so muzzleloader used to be you could not use a scope during muzzleloader season. You could use a muzzleloader during like the regular firearm season, because we got a firearm season and then a muzzleloader season that comes afterwards. And you could have a scope on it. But once muzzleloader season proper starts, you can't have a scope on a muzzleloader. Well, they changed that. But I mean, I like mine without anyway. I mean, I want a little bit of difficulty, you know? So, you know, it's just got like the fiber optic, like open sights or whatever. So, and I'm saying that because like it's next weekend, our firearm season opens up. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go. I know I won't be able to go on the weekend, but, when I do go up, I'm really considering like, do I just take a muzzleloader instead of my, you know, I have a Savage Axis, right? Things like a laser. But I don't know. I kind of want to rotate through some of the, and I've shot a lot of deer with my muzzle loader during muzzle loader season, but I just kind of like that whole like one shot thing, you know, where you just gotta make sure the open sights on that thing are sweet. And I'm shooting what do you call it? Blackhorn 209, right? It's such an accurate gun, and shooting these Barnes 250 grain bullets, you know, the TEZs out of there, and like God, they just you know, they work really good. So I'm kind of psyched about it, because I didn't actually get to pull the trigger last year on anything with the muzzle loader, and I'm like, you know, maybe I'll just take that one out, or I don't know, who knows? It'll be a last minute decision. Maybe I'll take a 30-30 or just scope 30-06 and just go grocery shopping, but I don't know. But, it's fun. I mean, I've seen a few of your videos too, with the muzzleloader, and this kind of leads me to my next thing. You're kind of like an equal opportunity, hunter, right? I mean, you enjoy shooting like, you know, rifle, stick bow. I don't think I've seen you with a compound, but like muzzleloader, that kind of thing, shotgun, you kind of enjoy it all.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've gotten over the years, cause I've shot so many deer with a rifle. I've kind of like, most I've wanted to start taking my bow during the rut some, but that's kind of a hard thing, because it's hard to predict deer movement in big woods during the rut. Sometimes it's hard to get within like stick bow range, like, you know, 20 and under. I haven't had much experience bow hunting rut other than for like getting in close to deer during the rut, unless it's like whenever we go out to Eastern Virginia and stuff. And that's like completely different terrain than what's here. Out there, it's completely flat with pine thickets where they've logged and planted pines, and then, you know, open hardwoods. But then here you've got cattle fields, and you've got like places that's grown up and nothing but briar. And then you've got some open woods, and then you'll have like the big mountain woods that nobody's really touched before, and it's just big open woods. And then if you go to like public land, like the national forest around here, it's nothing but big hard woods. It's most of the time wide open, unless it's got a lot of laurel in it. So
what do you mostly hunt? Are you mostly mostly public then? Are you private or?
There's a club near me, like really close to my house, and my dad grew up living over there, and it's 33,000 acres, so it's like a really decent sized club. There's plenty of land, but they give out a bunch of permits, and sometimes it can feel like you're trying to hunt public land, trying to get a spot, especially during rifle season or muzzleloading. Sometimes muzzleloading season's bad, but this year during bow season, there hasn't been many people over there. But when rifle season comes, especially when the doe days come on the weekends, that's whenever, like, you don't get over there at 4 o'clock, you don't get a spot.
Really?
So it's private land, but it's not private land. But I've recently got into hunting public land around here, just because there's a big track of it. There's a lot of it, like within 45 minutes of my house, that nobody hunts. Like, it's untouched.
I wonder why that is. I mean, is it just is it terrain that's keeping people out, or is it just like not the? It's more of like the. I don't know a ton about. I know it's not technically, it's not the South, right? It's totally different, right? But like, right. When people talk about hunting clubs, like say in Georgia or Alabama or whatever, any of these places, or South Carolina, they've got these like these hunting clubs, and it's like it's kind of entrenched in the culture, right? Is Virginia like that too, or is it just happens to be just like a hunting club that's there? You know, like what keeps people out of the public? You know, is it terrain?
I'd say it could be terrain, because a lot of the national forest is steeper than most of the stuff you'll find. Now, you go just west of like where I'm at, and you get over there into the border of Virginia and Kentucky, and that's where you get like steep. A lot of that mountain is walkable, like gradual walkable, but some of that stuff to the west side of me down towards Kentucky is extremely steep. Like, I would drive through it looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd want to walk up there. Like, it's probably like 800 feet of elevation gain, but it's like straight up and down. And it's the people who hunt out there, I have so much respect for, because it wouldn't be fun walking up and down that hill every single day.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, so let's circle back a little bit to bows and arrows here, right? So I see you shooting a stick bow a lot, right? You got a bunch, mm-hmm. like, so you got a bunch of videos and stuff like that. Did you ever shoot a compound, or did you just go right to traditional?
No, I started hunting with a compound at 9 because of the weight restrictions. You know, I think whenever I started bow hunting, you had to pull like 35 pounds.
Yeah.
And I started bow hunting whenever I was 9, but I never got a chance at anything until I was 10. And whenever I was 10, I killed 2 deer with a bow. I killed 2 does. And then from there, it just blew up. I killed quite a few deer. I killed probably 2 or 3 deer a year after that, and then I ended up killing a bear, my first bear with my compound. And then killed a couple more bear. Well, let's see. I think I killed 1 more bear with my compound, and then usually every year I'd kill like 2 to 3 does with my compound. I never really seen bucks during bow season. So I usually just use bow season to go shoot a few does, and then once gun season come in, then I would start trying to kill a buck.
Okay. I saw you still shooting compound too, or just your bear? Your bear. I did longbow.
I did last. I switched last year because I got big into shooting a compound instinctively, and I probably shouldn't have, but during season I was playing around with the compound and shooting with my fingers and stuff, and then I wasn't shooting my recurve as much, and I kind of lost a little bit of confidence, and I was a little nervous to go take my recurve back again, and I sighted my compound and took it a little bit, but I never got a shot at anything with it. But this year, after doing that last year, I was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to stick with my longbow all year this year.
So you've really ramped up your videos as far as focusing on A, your brand, and B, I always hate saying brand. It always sounds kind of douchey to me, you know, like if I say it for myself, but you know what I mean, right? But you're that, and you know, you're doing a lot of like shooting tips and how you're kind of how your journey is and the things that work for you and don't work for you and some shooting tips and that kind of stuff. So I know the videoing thing has been around for a while, but like, what made you kind of ramp that up in the last, I'm going to say, what, maybe year and a half, right? I mean, you really started to put a whole lot more stuff out there. What kind of brought that about?
Yeah, I've wanted to do it for a long time. And then I started this channel and started posting videos on it. And then last year, I didn't do hardly anything during the summer. And I really wanted to, you know, start making videos during the summer. And then I got over that 1,000 subscriber mark. And then that kind of pushed me to making more videos. Once turkey season was over, I was just like, well, I got to find something to do this summer. And I was like, I'm out here shooting my bow like 6-7 days a week. You know, I figure out a bunch of stuff that could probably help people. Cause I like to, one of my favorite things about hunting is going with someone new, or when someone new kills a deer and they need help gutting it or skinning it or whatever, or needs help with stuff. I love to like teach and show people stuff, like, you know, new people stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, if I can help, you know, it might not help a bunch of people, but if I can, you know, something that helped me could probably help somebody else. So I can, you know, make a video on it and post it, and then it can help other people get better at shooting.
Yeah, sure. And you've kind of settled on it's a bear Osable, right? I don't know how to say Osable. I don't know how you say it, but.
I've people have told me that I've pronounced it wrong, but I pronounce it Osable.
Osable.
I don't know.
It's a river, right? I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it either, but I've never shot one, and I don't really know anybody. Like, I've never seen one in the wild. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So you're the only guy that I know that's actually like shooting one of those things. It's kind of like when you see what else they have, that Cheyenne, right? The bear Cheyenne kind of recurve they have, right? It's one of those, like, it's been around for a long time, but you don't really see a lot of people shooting it. So what kind of attracts you to that one?
I'm more of a fan of the reflex deflex longbows anyway. I like a bow with slimmer limbs, but, you know, thicker. The reason I got that bow was I was back. This has been a while ago. This was one of the first bows I had ever got. There was a guy I watched on YouTube all the time from Australia, Captain Bowman, and he shot one. Or like he had bought one. He shot like some foxes and stuff with it. And I was like, man, that's a really cool bow. So I kind of obsessed over it all like summer. And Christmas was coming up and I begged my parents for it. And they got it for me. And then I think it was the third day that I had it. I had it in my truck and I was coming home, and then flipped the truck in the creek. And the first thing I did was jump out and go look for my bow to make sure that it didn't unstring and blow up.
Oh, my God.
And it was, because it made me nervous. Because I had just gotten it, and I loved that thing. And I jumped out. Well, because I couldn't open the door. The door kind of caved in, but that's a different story. But I just hopped out the window and then jumped, and I couldn't. I had to run to the passenger side and open the back door to see if my bow was still okay. After that, I started shooting it all the time. It was my favorite bow to shoot. And I ended up taking it the next year is whenever I switched to like fully taking my, traditional bow, the stick bow.
Yeah.
So I started taking it, and I had some tuning issues, and, I ended up shooting opening day that evening. I ended up shooting a doe, and I shot her back, and I looked for her for probably 12 hours and never found her. And then that Monday came, and I had a bear come up about 10 yards, and I drew back, settled in, everything was perfect, and I let go, and that arrow come, you can watch it on the camera, it swings back and forth real hard, and then it hits him in the neck, and that thing bled like crazy, and we actually tracked him. You know, bear will run to the thickest stuff it can until it dies, yeah. And we tracked it for Probably. We tracked it on our hands and knees for probably 3 to 4 miles and good blood the whole time. But he just kept going down this big bottom to where I was like, even if we do find him, how do we get him out of here? And eventually it was like 2 o'clock that evening. And I was like, I'm done. I was like, I don't know if he's dead or not. So.
What made it go? What made the air go wonky? Just like a bad shot or was something wrong with the bow or what?
I don't know if when I tuned it, I changed something in form or what. And I had some like extremely stiff spine arrows. I tried everything. I tried to retune them and I'd all cut the arrows too short. And I don't know if whenever I was tuning them, I was getting a false reading or something changed. My knock height may have changed or whatever.
Yeah, you're getting the false weak, you know, because it slaps off the riser and kicks you sideways. Yeah, yep.
I'd say it was probably what was happening. And then it finally started shooting straight. So I fleshed them up, got them ready to go. And then like a week before season came, all of a sudden, like they just started going everywhere. And I'm like, so I ordered the gold tip insert weights to where you can stick them down the back of the arrow and screw them in the back of the insert. And I ordered them and I ended up putting like 3 or 4 in the back of one of them and they're 10 grains a piece and it still didn't straighten the arrow up. And, you know, I was still kind of new to everything. And the smart thing to Ben was not take the bow, just get a new set of arrows and tune them again. But I was too new to everything. And I took it anyway. And then I didn't think it would throw the arrow off that bad. But whenever I was shooting down out of a tree stand, I wasn't coming to the same draw length. I was short drawing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it ended up making it even more stiff, which made it go crazy. And both times I hit about a foot to the left of where I was wanting to hit.
Wow.
So I ended up getting another set of arrows and tuning them, but I never got an opportunity at anything.
So what's your setup now with that? It's, I mean, it's because watching you shoot, I mean, everything's flying straight, looking great, right? So mm-hmm. what do you got going on now?
Now I got a new string for it this year, which I had a string on it that was good, but it had a big quang and it had some hand shock in it and I was running it too high of a brace height as well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, let me play with the brace height a little bit. So I started trying to drop the brace height down because, you know, a lot of those reflex deflex longbows like a shorter brace height, like somewhere between 6.5 to 7.5. And I was shooting it and it was at like 8. So I was like, well, let me try to get it down to 7. And I tried to get it down to 7 and the string, you know, didn't have enough. The string was too long. Mm. And once it stretched out too long to where I couldn't get it down to 7 inches. Or it was too short, I mean. It stretched out, but it didn't stretch out enough.
Yeah, you run out of twists, right? So, yep.
Yeah, and I ran out of twist to sit there and untwist it. And basically, whenever the bow was unstrung, the strands were falling apart because I had taken all the twists out of it. So I was like, well, let me get a new string for it. So I got a new string for it, and I put the brace height to about, I think I started at like 6.5, and it like immediately shot so much better. And then I upped it to about 6 3/8, and it just, or 6 5/8, I mean, and it just started shooting like a dream. Like all the hand shock was gone. It made no noise. And I was like, oh, this is going to be a shooter. And then, plus it's got a wider grip than that old Bear Polar that I had. It's got one of the slim grips on it. But this, where I like to really force my palm into the grip, that Bear Osible's got a thicker grip on it. And it really like fits my palm better because I got wider hands. So it really sits in my palm a lot more comfortable than the slimmer grip bow does. So I was just like, I might end up taking this bow this year. So I tuned some arrows for both bows, and then I just enjoyed shooting it so much that I was like, I got to take this bow.
What do you got? What do you got for your arrow setup then?
I I just went ahead and bought the traditional gold tip traditional blims, just because I've never found any problem with them. I typically like their regular traditionals because they're lower grains per inch, so you can get a higher FOC with them. But
right.
I was like, yeah. Well, I'm already going to run 300 grains up front, so I might as well just get the blims and then throw the 300 grains up front. And that's going to give me a high FOC anyway. So I should be about like 19% somewhere around in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put the 100 grain insert and then a 200 grain head on the end of it.
Yeah, that's pretty. Are they 500 spine, or I'm guessing, or?
I think they're. I think they're 400s.
400s, okay. Yeah, I've got a really similar setup on mine, but they're 500 spine is what I'm using. But yeah, I mean, I've never had a problem with the gold tip regulars. I think the gold tip XT, I think, are the ones that are heavier grains per inch.
Yeah.
Remember, and I don't know if there's a different one that's actually like a skinnier shaft too, but I just use the regular gold tip ones for pretty much all my bows there. But yeah, what kind of broadhead you running then?
Oh, this year I went with the VPA single bevels. I don't know what made me go. Well, the thing is, once you get up to like 200 grain broadheads anyway, your kind of options start to limit out. Because not a lot of manufacturers, not a lot of people want to shoot something 200 to 250 grains anyway. So I was kind of looking around and I seen the VPAs. And last year I shot Grizzly Stick Samurais and the tip would curl every time I shot at something or, you know, shot the two deer that I shot. And then every time I'd shoot and it would, you know, I'd miss or whatever to go in the ground. The tip would always curl and it would always suck sharpening that out.
Mm-hmm.
And since the VPA single bevels didn't have the tip, it was just kind of flat on the tip. I was just like, that might work good for, you know, not having to resharpen, like, you know, put a lot of effort in resharpening it after I shoot it once. So I got them and so far they've done, I shot it. The deer with one, and then I've shot at a coon not too long ago. I had like 15 of them come up on. Made a shot at one that moved right out of the way about the second I shot, and it went down on the ground and hit some rocks. And I pulled it out and touched it up on a leather strop, and it's ready to go again.
Yeah. Yeah, I put a Tonto tip on mine, you know, on like I've got like A standards and I've had Zwickies and stuff, but you know, just to kind of help prevent that. But yeah, same thing. If you're gonna hit rocks, I mean, where did I miss? I missed like 8 squirrels already this year, which is ridiculous because I mean, just pretty good on them, but one of the areas I go, it's a lot of rocky soil, a lot of rocks too, but like rocky soil too. So even if you're like kind of shooting down, speaking of raccoons, I think I said that in the last podcast, I had one that I shot, and it took my arrow with it over like a 15 foot cliff and then down another 30 foot down into a marsh, never found it, but I mean, it was skewered, but, and then the other squirrels I was, you know, the squirrel arrows or whatever. Yeah. I mean, you hit something hard enough. It's, you know, even, you know, a standard isn't exactly like premium broadhead, but it's not, I mean, it's been around. I mean, it's a really good broadhead. Right. But I mean, even that one, I had a kind of a curl a little bit, you know, so our one kind of stuck in a tree. Maybe I curled it trying to like wiggle it out of there. But I think, I don't know. I think you're going to get that with everything, but try to mitigate, you know, that happening. You know, on animals. So I don't know. We'll see. So that goes if I actually put one through something. But so how often do you get to go out? Right. I mean, you say you kill your kids or whatever around. I mean, on average, let's say like, I don't know, how many times do you get to go out?
Usually, for the last few years, the best thing that ever happened to me was COVID, because I was still in high school and they shut school down. Like, I think it was like a week before turkey season started. So I hunted every day of turkey season that year. And then the next year, the next school year was my senior year. Well, they gave us the option to bounce between online school and in school. So mm-hmm. when deer season come around, I went online and then went back in school. And then when turkey season come around, I went back online until I hunted. So I hunted every day of turkey season too, and then went back to in school, or I went back on my exam days and did all the work I needed to make up, and then that was it. But then after that, I worked. Well, I went straight to work doing CNC machining right after high school, and then the hunting season come around, and I'm like, I'm not going to be able to hunt at all. And I was just sitting there thinking about it. And finally, I just like, I got to put my 2 weeks in, and the next year, I was like, well, now what am I going to do? You know, I'm going to have to go probably get another job, and I don't want to have to quit again. You know, I don't want to end up quitting again, right, deer season. But my uncle was a supervisor at a golf course, and I'd worked for him a couple of years, and, you know, seasonal job, they were going to lay us off and start a hunting season anyway. So I went to work out there, and then I worked out there last summer until a new guy bought it. And when the new guy bought it, we had to clean all the equipment up so they could sell it and get it out of the way. So we had, I think it was the first 2 weeks of bow season. And I was like, crap, well, I don't want to quit, you know, leave everybody else to clean up all the stuff and all that. And it borders like a big track of like 30,000 acres of national forest. So I was like, so, you know, what if I come hunt in the morning and work during the day and then I'll go hunt in the evening? And they were like, all right. So I started going in the morning, and it's about 45 minutes away from my house. And I was leaving my house at about 2:30 in the morning, and then getting over there hunting, getting down, working, going back in the evening to hunting again. And then by the time I'd close the shop up and get home, it would be about 11 o'clock. And then I'd go usually eat, go to bed, get up at 2:30 again, and drive all the way back out there. And I did that for about 2 weeks. And finally, they were like, he was like, I got to cut some hours. And I was like, all right. And I was like, well, I'll go ahead and quit then. And you won't have to cut anybody else's hours. And he was like, all right. So.
Wow.
And then this year, I just cut grass and did some odd jobs. But I've been working through hunting season this year. I haven't got to go. Which the first week, I got really sick the first week this year. I don't know what in the world I had. But I had never been that sick before. I had a temperature for 8 full days. After that, I think I killed the doe that Tuesday. And then I started feeling better by that Friday. And then I hunted some that next week. But I had to work in between. And then I've had to work the last 2 weeks. But after yesterday was the last day I'll have to work for a little over a month, so I can't really complain. We're leaving tomorrow to go out to Eastern Virginia and hunt, and then I'll be out there for 2 weeks and then come home and then probably go up to a big track of national forest and go up in there and camp and hunt up in the mountain for probably 3 or 4 days, and then I'll come back and it'll be rifle season in the rut here. And then I'll probably be hunting here for two weeks, and then I'll probably go back to work. Hopefully I'll have a full set of tags filled by that time.
Yeah, no kidding. God, I'm just sitting here like so envious right now of being able to do that. You know? God.
Yeah. I think this year during turkey season, I didn't miss but like 4 days of the full season, the full month and a half that we got for turkey season. I think I only missed like 4 days.
Really?
But that the only reason I missed the very last day is because I tagged out the day before the very last day. So,
no kidding. So let's get back into the woods here. So when you go, whether it's I don't know if it's different for you, whether it's private, public or whatever, where, like, what's your setup like as far as like how far are you going in, you know, tree stand on the ground pack? Like, what are you walking when you leave your truck? What do you have with you? Basically, how far are you going?
Usually whenever I leave the truck, it feels like I've got the whole entire house with me. My pack that I packed around last year, I packed around every bit of 50 pounds worth of stuff last year, every single time I left a truck like a dummy. And it got a little bit tiring towards the end of October. Because last year I was a lot more mobile because I bought I got my whole saddle set up and, I started hunting a lot more mobile and just bouncing around. But last year we had so many acorns, it was hard to pattern deer just because they could literally most of the trees around here is oak trees. Like when you go in the woods, 70 to 75% of the trees are going to be oak trees. And then every single one of them were dropping last year. Like whenever I was hunting that national forest up above the golf course, it was just, you couldn't step in a spot without stepping on a pile of acorns. Like it was just everywhere. So it was really kind of hard to set up last year. So I was really mobile. And then as soon as the white oaks started dropping, you know, I started hitting those because the red oaks will drop around the start of season. And then there towards like the second to third week, the white oaks will start dropping. As soon as they start dropping, usually I hit them. But this year is like complete opposite of last year. I walked around for about 45 minutes through a spot it's nothing but red oaks and there was not an acorn on the ground. And then I went to another spot that's all white oaks and there was not an acorn nowhere in the tree or anything. So it went from last year being like a bunch of acorns and then this year just like none at all. So everything's changed a lot. I'm hoping that when we go out to Eastern Virginia, there's going to be more acorns out there. But here this year, usually I've got my saddle with me. I've tried to get a little bit more confident about sitting on the ground because I've never, you know, been used to doing that during bow season. So I've wanted to get, because there's some spots that I've been to where I'm like, wow, if I sat on the ground here, I'd kill a deer. But because I was up in a tree and picked the wrong tree, I didn't get a shot because the tree was too far away from the path I knew the deer were going to come down or whatever. Whereas if I had just sat on the ground, I probably would have killed one. But most of the time, I'm up in my saddle. And then I've got a lot of the times I'm going in pretty far, like anywhere from half a mile over. There's some spots I got that's like I could shoot a deer and it could literally like run down in the bed of the truck. Those are the spots I usually go to when I need a quick spot. But sometimes it's nice. Last year, the second doe I shot, I could literally just kick her down the hill and she would have rolled up to the front end of my truck, which was nice. But most of the time, I'm usually packing them out just because, you know, they're a decent ways in. And then terrain plays a big difference there too. So I keep a pulley with me where if I kill one, I can just find like a little low hanging limb, throw it over and hoist the deer up in the tree and cut it up. And it makes it so much easier because it's so hard not to get hair on the meat on the ground.
Yeah.
But when you hang it up, I can sit there and whack it up and have it packed up and ready to walk out in no time.
Yeah, it's the hair thing. I mean, like I typically try to do like a debone thing, you know, or gutless method. But on the ground, you're right. Like you got the hide that just always wants to kind of curl over wherever the cut is, you know, and kind of flop over and stuff. And I mean, I no matter what I do, man, I got to get better at that. But it's so much easier when it's hanging up because it's just kind of like gravity is kind of pulling it down out of the way once you start skinning things. So. Do you go back in for it though, or do you have enough room in your pack when you're packing out? You carry a lot of stuff as it is. So let's just say you're like a mile in, shoot one. What are you coming back out at all with an empty pack or no?
It depends. Like if I'm gonna wait for my dad or something to come help me track something, I might go empty my pack at the truck and then wait on him, and then we'll walk back in or something. But most of the time, I just carry everything with me. I'll have gloves and a bigger knife, bags, and then I got the I think it's the X2 by Eberle Stock, and it's a frame pack. It's a meat hauler anyway, and it's got the two side pockets, and it's got the one big middle pocket. So it's, I can always just cut up a deer and fit it in there. And then even if I can't fit it all in the middle, I can always just strap it to the outside if I need some extra space to put stuff. But last year I packed out one deer with my saddle stuff and all that stuff in there. And it was pretty heavy. It was a little hard. I feel like I know what the elk hunters, that when they pack out the elk, like, pack out the elk, I know what they feel like now, because I had all my saddle stuff, my camera gear and all that, plus I'd killed a decent sized doe, and it's kind of hard to pack out, and she was probably about 120 pounds, so there's a good bit of meat that comes off of that. And then I put that on there, and after I had all that on there, it was probably 70-75 pounds packing it out. And I was like, I was probably a mile and a half from the truck, and I was coming straight up. Most of it walking out was straight up. Walking down, walking in was like fine because it's downhill, but walking out, I was going straight up the whole time. It got a little rough there towards the end.
Yeah, I can imagine. What you were saying earlier too about being trying more on the ground, and just it's literally like it mimics like what I just kind of went through last week. I've been in this one spot, and I had deer come out, and it's kind of like I hunt a lot of like marshy, you know, kind of where there's marsh grass and kind of stuff, you know. These are floodplains that are sometimes flooded, sometimes not, depending on the year. But these trees aren't very safe to be in, number one, because like even like the healthy quote unquote looking ones topple over all the time. Mm-hmm. There's no strong root system. The other thing is there's, you know, when you I know where they're coming out, and it's historically like I've had encounters last year with them, and I was always like one tree off. So I'm getting closer and closer and closer. And just that was the last Monday or whatever. I'm sitting there peeking around, and like right at like 10 minutes till like legal end of day or whatever, and I look and I kind of make eye contact, kind of not caught me by surprise, but it was tough to see because it's so like dim light at that point. I'm like, oh crap, is a deer. And then it was a younger one and she caught me, and then there was another one, and then like an older doe that was with them, and they were all kind of tentative. And you know, the older one kind of was coming in after like 5 minutes, and I'm like hugging the tree, literally like not looking. I'm looking like, you know, I'm looking at the tree, staring, you know, my face, I'm like squished up to it, and they're on the other side of it. They're on my 12 o'clock, but I would kind of peek my head ever so slightly just so I can get my eyeball around it. And then they would start to come. And then the doe started to, the older doe started to, you know, she was still kind of a little sketchy, but she was coming closer. But then like I needed her to turn so that I can actually grab, you know, like step away from the tree and actually be able to get into a shooting position. And she turned like 180, you know, so I was just pretty much staring at her butt the entire time. And then all I needed her to do was turn 90 degrees one way or another. And she was at like less than 15 yards, right? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But it's twice now I've been busted in this tree and the one kind of near it. And I need the way they're coming out, I need to get closer to where this kind of like line of bushes is that they're coming out of. So I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to go sit in a tree again now, because like whether it's the same set of deer or different ones, they know to look up there now. And you know, if I had been like literally like right, you know, as they step through the doorway, as it were, you know, in that line of bushes, I could have had a shot, you know what I mean, potentially. But I don't know. I'm strategizing, thinking what I want to do there. But I mean, but I hear you. Like it's sometimes, you know, I think the ground game is going to be better, you know, just because. Oh. You can't, you know, where I need to be, the closest tree I need to be, I can't get into, you know, because it's like the leaning 45 degrees and all it just needs is a stiff wind to push it over the rest of the way. Right. So, yeah, it's crazy. And then this year too, we had, huge white acorn drop. I usually miss the acorn drop just for work or whatever. I've been traveling or whatever this year. But and I found one of the places I go, I mean, it was just raining acorns. Mm. And at first I thought, oh, great. But then, like you said, like you can't take like two steps without like crunching acorns for like this entire tract of land. And I'm like, well, you know, I only found a couple trees that had like poop under it kind of thing. But I mean, they're everywhere. I mean, they can literally walk a path on acorns from, you know, for a couple miles or whatever. So I made it really, really tough to pattern. So, I almost kind of wish there wasn't that much food sources here. I was like wish for acorns, but now that I got it, I'm like, I don't necessarily know that I want all these acorns anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. Like I know if I found, but a lot of these deer here come out into the fields and they're hunting field deer is so much harder when you're bow hunting because it's just you can't ever predict where they're exactly going to come out at because they'll come out on different paths. And I haven't been able to figure out. My dad said the other day he seen a buck, a little buck, eating like wilted briar leaves. So that goes to show me that there's not much food around anyway. Because typically, like right now, they're going to be eating acorns like as many as they can. They're going to be cleaning them up. But there's something else that they're eating that I haven't found yet. And yeah. I probably, you know, most of the time from now on out, once I come back from the trip, usually I'm not hunting food anymore. I'm usually hunting rut pattern or whatever. Sure. So it's not, I didn't have time to go this year to be able to find out, you know, because all my good spots, I went and checked. There wasn't an acorn on the ground nowhere. So I was like, well, I'm screwed here. And then I couldn't find what they were eating. I don't know. They were coming out in the fields a lot. So I'd say they were just eating a lot of browse. But I never did find exactly what they were trying to find to eat or what they were substituting acorns for.
You know, that's kind of doesn't bode well for, food source, unless there's, like you said, unless there's another food source that you don't know about, you know, they're just snacking on that stuff. So, I was going to ask you. Okay. So we're like an hour into this here. I don't want to make too long, but, I think one of the first things that I watched you, one of the videos was you ended up shooting, a deer with, I think, was it your grandfather's bow? Is that the one? Is that? Yeah. You want to tell that story? We can kind of wrap that up with a hunting story, and it was pretty cool. I want to hear it again.
Yeah, well, there's I killed two of them last year with it. I killed the one out on the public land above the golf course that, unfortunately, the coyote, the whole pack of coyotes found before I found it, and it was in a million different pieces. That one didn't end as well as I wanted it to, because I didn't get to. I got one back strap off of it that they didn't eat, and that was it. But the other one, the first one, I'd been hunting up there above the golf course, and I couldn't pattern the deer because there was just, you know, so many acorns. And then one day I was walking up through there, and I found some like fresh, like really fresh poop. And I'm like, well, they're eating one of these trees right here and spending some time because, you know, there's a few piles of poop here. So I'm like, clearly they're spending a little bit more time here. So I shot up the tree, and then I was sitting there. I don't know what I was doing, but I hadn't looked to my left. And when I did, there was two does standing there at about 15 yards. I was like, oh, crap. So I reach up and turn my GoPro on. And when I turned my GoPro on, they seen me, and I slowly slid down and I grabbed my bow and I went to shoot her, and she just stood there. And I was like, I'm going to turn my camera on. So I just reached over, turned my big camera on, got it on her. And she was just still standing there, like acting like nothing was going on. So I was like, because she was 30 yards once she stopped. But I knew I could make that shot, but, you know, deer can move a long ways by the time an arrow gets there at 30 yards. But she was acting so calm that I was like, I'd say they probably had never seen a hunting, like a hunter before, just because of, you know, it's a landlocked public. You know, nobody really hunts it because the only other way to get to it is you either got to go through the golf course or you got to go from the other side of the mountain and walk over. So I'd say they probably had never seen somebody up in there hunting before. And so they weren't really too nervous. And they were just kind of standing there looking around. I was like, well, I'm going to shoot her. So I pulled back and shot. She ducked right into it. Perfect. And I hit her right in the shoulder. But where I hit her in the shoulder, I didn't know if I got both lungs or not. And a deer can live a long time on just one lung. So it made me a little nervous. And I backed out and then came back the next morning with my cousin. We looked and found some blood and tracked it for a little bit. And then it just went completely dry. So then we resorted to just kind of walking around and walking to where we thought she would have went to. And then I was going to go down there to the shop, and because we were working that day. So I was going to go down to the shop and get everybody, my uncle and everybody else that was working, and go up there and look so we could just walk around until we found her. And then on the way back down, my cousin whistled at me and I walked over there. And he's like, all right, good news and bad news. And I was like, oh, crap. And he was like, I found her, but she's in about 15 different pieces. And I went, huh? And he was like, there's nothing left of her. And I was like, you're kidding. He's like, no, there's nothing left. So we walked up there, and there was, I've never seen coyotes tear up a deer that bad in one night. But they had completely, like, they had eaten her whole back ham or whole front shoulder. They had started on the other back ham and they had tore the guts apart. They had ate one back strap on one side and most of the ribs. And then the only thing that I could get to that didn't have guts on it was the back strap on the other side that they hadn't started eating or didn't have guts on it. And that was the only one that was the only thing I got out of that deer.
Dang. Coyotes a big problem here, or is it just like a one-off?
Yeah, they're getting bad. They're getting bad around here. There was one night, I think it was the night I recorded the bucks fighting from last year. I think it was that night. Anyway, my dad met me at my truck, and we were standing there talking, and I was telling him about the bucks fighting and stuff. And there was every bit of 25 different coyotes start howling, and one of them had to have been no more than 50 yards from us in the field, but we couldn't see it. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, it's legal to shoot them in the dark. So I was like, well, if I can get a light on it, you know, I'll shoot with a pistol or something. We never could see it out in the field, but they just keep getting worse, and the coons have gotten really bad too around here. The bear as well. There was, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, we seen in Eastern Virginia between four people in 5 days, I think it was five people in 4 days, we seen 33 different bear.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it was that. You now I really want to see a bear because I want to shoot one and, you know, render down. I had never thought about rendering down the bear fat until my pastor did it last year with a bear that his brother-in-law killed. And I started cooking stuff in that bear fat, and I was like, that's the best thing I've ever ate. So I've been dying to shoot one. Well, I was actually on the ground and had one 10 yards from me, and I didn't get a shot at it. I think it was the right after opening day.
I've never had bear, but I hear all the stuff about bear fat, you know, render down bear fat and stuff, mm-hmm. cooking in bear fat, that kind of thing. And yeah, everyone says it's, you know, pretty fantastic. So, I mean, we have bears here, we have bear hunting here, but it's, you know, it's lottery and it's like more up north, you know, there's really not any like down here or whatever. So we don't normally just kind of run into them, at least not around here. Just kind of wandering the, you know, I'll never be out like deer hunting, like, oh, there's a bear. Like it's raccoons. Right. Yeah. Tons of raccoons. This year it seems like there's a lot more. Coyotes, you know, they kind of go up and down as far as like populations go, you know, and different different areas I go. I got a lot of public land, like different tracts of public land around here that I can go. And one of them I can go to, I could never see a single like dropping, never hear one. And in another place I go, they sound off every night right before about, you know, 30 minutes before dusk, you know, and then they do their howling and all that stuff. And then you can hopscotch basically down the trail on coyote scat, you know, but it all kind of depends on the area, I suppose. But yeah, that's it. So, all right, man, kind of had you on for like over an hour here. So anything else you want to talk about that we didn't like, that we touch on, anything like new with the channel, anything coming down the road here, or just more content, or, you know, what's in your future here?
Well, hopefully it's more hunting content. Hopefully we go out and I'll have a good successful little bit, but because you know I got plenty of tags to fill in Virginia. We get a good amount of tags, and that's one thing. A lot of people, like I talk a lot of people talk to a lot of people about like how many deer I've killed and stuff, and a lot of people it sounds like a lot, but we get 3 buck tags and 3 doe tags, and then you can just buy 6 doe tags at a time for $18, and you can just buy as many as you want.
Jeez.
So you can, in reality, you know, you got, we also get a new doe day this year in my county. We get a new doe day, and that first Saturday of the early muzzleloading, we get a new doe day, and I'll be back home for that. So I'll probably shoot a doe that day too. Cause there's a huge, like the doe to buck ratio. Like there's a lot more does than there are bucks over there on that club that I hunt on, because nobody really, and there's a lot of, like, I'm pretty sure one of the nicer bucks that I was seeing got shot from the road while I was hunting the other day. But you know, it kind of happens a lot around my area. So it's just kind of like a normal thing. It's just like, oh, well, there goes that one. I guess I'll go try to find a different one to hunt.
Sucks. Yeah, but at least you got plenty of other tags. I mean, that's, you know.
Oh, yeah. We can shoot. Usually I'll kill somewhere around 10 deer a year, because I'll usually fill all 3 buck tags. And then I'll usually kill a couple does or a few does in bow season, and then I'll feel like my main license tags are in bow season, and then we get the 3 doe days in rifle season, and then the very last day of season, well, then you get the 2 weeks of light archery, which is all, you can shoot a doe any of those days, and then the very last day of muzzleloading, when season ends, is a doe day as well. So, and then a couple of years ago, they changed it to where you can shoot multiple deer a day too. So, I can also go, I can go on doe day, and just, you know, as long as I got tag, I can shoot a doe. So.
Dang. Well, dude, I have no doubt you're going to be, killing a lot of stuff, because, you know, you do. And then I'm looking forward to seeing all that content you're putting out. I'm really enjoying the channel. So why don't you tell everybody where they can follow you?
YouTube, Feel the Spirit, Instagram, and typically I've got a Facebook page, but I don't usually post on it very much. But mostly YouTube and Instagram is where I post the most.
Yep, Feel the Spirit. Yep, it's a good channel. I like watching it. You're pretty like genuine. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like pretentious or, you know, done up or anything like that. So I like that kind of content. So, and it's getting better and better too, you know, all the stuff you're putting out. So I'm really enjoying it. So, all right, man, listen, thanks for being on. Appreciate it. Stick with me after we hang up here. We'll wrap up, but after we stop recording rather, but thanks for being on. I appreciate it. It's a Sunday. I know you're getting, you know, packed up for this, you know, deer shooting extravaganza trip you're going on. I'm super jealous about. So everybody go follow Feel the Spirit, go follow the Boning Soul podcast, Boning Soul YouTube channel, all that stuff. So yeah, season's in full swing here. We're heading into
Well, by the time you hear this, I'm guessing we're going to be like right a little before the rut. So I'm going to pick up the cheater stick and hopefully go grocery shopping next week, or maybe the week after or something. So, all right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll talk to you next time.